It just keeps getting that way, doesn't it? Oh my goodness, yes, this is Fish and Frank, and we are back with another Radio Fishing. And we have Captain Brian Ball with us, we've got Robert, we've got everybody. It's just an amazing day to be on Radio Fishing. Okay, and the crowd just goes crazy. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, good morning.
Oh, they love you. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Okay, crowd, go away. Okay, good. You're done. All right, shut up. All right, there we go. There we go. You know, the audience.
Frank, who's going to win the football game tonight?
How many bases do you get on a game? What is it, like six holes or...
It's a PG-rated show, so I won't go anywhere.
No, really. What game's tonight?
It's the national championship, Florida State versus Auburn.
Ah, okay.
I think Auburn's going to win because it's cold outside and they're used to it.
That's right. They're in Cali, though.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
They're in California?
It was worth a guess.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say Florida's got a good shot if they go to California. You know, Auburn...
Florida State, not Florida. Florida had the worst football season ever.
Okay. Florida State. Now, that's up by Tallahassee, right?
Yeah, that's the wrong school.
The wrong school? Yep. Okay. So, what are you, a Gator?
Of course.
Of course. Okay. And the other one's Seminoles, right?
Something like that.
Okay. I don't know. I'm sorry. I should know this stuff. My daughter went to Gainesville, so I know what goes in Gainesville.
That's right.
Yeah, I know about the Gainesville stuff because my
Let's
kids...
Let's talk about there. Stuff that... matters. I have a pet goldfish.
Well, if we're talking about stuff that matters, now I'm hearing stories of gigantic, like, iguanas, stuff that's, you know, like, we got, what, 6-8-inch iguana around here, right?
Yeah, you know, 10 years ago, you could go out to Boca Grande on a hot day and ride around, and you would see iguanas, but the people out there have too much money invested in their... you know, decor around their homes, and they thought the iguanas would be better off if they were trapped and moved
somewhere
else.
If they were shot and killed.
Exactly.
If they were shot and killed. Let's get it right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, 15 years ago, you used to go there, and it was postcards, and all over the front Boca Beacon would say, hey, come see our fabulous island with our beautiful iguanas. It's nice. It's all that. And then 5 years later, come kill our iguanas. Here's iguana recipe books, the whole nine yards.
Well, now, be fair about the iguana recipe book. If people would learn to eat iguana, it is probably the most environmentally friendly meat you can raise because it costs less per pound to get a meat pound of iguana meat than it does almost anything else.
Sure.
I mean, not only the good eating, it really... In a world, if we were raising iguana instead of cattle, we could raise a lot more meat per acre with iguana than we could with cattle.
You think Ruth Chris would serve those?
Yeah.
Nice steakhouse, nice iguana house.
Hey, you never know. I mean, I haven't had iguana yet, but from what I understand, it's not bad.
So 2 weeks ago, Frank, I'm fishing up north of Pirate Harbor, just inside of Black Key. And I actually grew up in Pirate Harbor, fished there my whole life. I've seen some strange things, seen some rattlesnakes swimming island, alligators, raccoons, all that.
I've seen me some strange things in this here world, Frank.
Yes,
but
sir.
I tell you, I've seen some weird stuff, some strange stuff, but you're about to tell me about a stranger thing.
Yes, sir, I am. We were fishing. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and the wind was out of the east, and we were catching a few small snook off this island, and I look over to the left of us, and I see what I think is about a 4-foot alligator coming across from one island to another, and the direction of the wind and tide and everything, it ended up being about 15 yards from the boat, and it was about 4-4.5-foot iguana.
Really?
Healthy as could be.
No kidding.
I've never in my life seen one on the east side of Harbor.
Now, I've seen them out by my house. I live in Harbor Heights. We had iguanas out there for a while. The freeze kind of knocked them all back. Haven't seen any since the freeze. But a 4-foot iguana?
Yes, sir.
That's an old iguana.
Yeah, he was healthy. I mean, his spikes and everything, he was in really good shape. He was pretty funny. Kind of hit the back pedal on us, and the tide blew him around, you know, the side of us, and he slithered up there in the island. But I would imagine tonight he's going to be looking for some warm mud somewhere. It's supposed to get pretty cold here, so.
Robert, they burrow, or what do they do?
They dig dens.
So he'll dig down underground, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, theoretically, but he's also on the water. I mean, it creates its own little micro environment.
But I'm gonna call that normal, but when that wind's blowing out of the north like that, 30 miles an hour, that's going to create a lot of frost right there on the water. That if it gets down 29 degree wind chill, that first foot of salt water is going to be 29 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's going to have a rough night.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, green iguanas have pretty much been all over the state. I mean, they've got little isolated pockets of them from, just north of Tampa all the way down to Miami.
Yeah, and a four-footer is going to take a lot of cold to get to him.
Yeah, usually. I mean, if they're in the wrong areas, they'll definitely freeze and die, or it'll put them in, just like snook, it'll put them in that hypothermic shock.
Yeah, they'll just go to sleep for a while and then wake up as sun hits them.
Yeah, usually what ends up killing them is the respiratory infection that follows that. You know, them just getting hit with the cold can sometimes, flat out kill them. But
kind of like pneumonia.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. It's like they talk about the Burmese python.
Yeah.
You know, they're so worried about it traveling north. It can't live north. Okay, it might survive the summer. It isn't going to survive the winter.
I think it's hilarious because the guys in the Everglades, the trappers, are making a fortune because they can buy them cheaper than the government will pay them bounty for.
Yeah.
So all they got to do is go out, put a bunch of traps, and release some, snakes close to the trap.
They
don't
even need to release them. All they do is put them in a bag and say, look what I caught.
Yeah. It's such a joke. I mean, only an idiot would offer more money than for a snake, something caught in the wild, than what you can buy it for.
Right. Doesn't make sense.
It makes sense if you're the government. You just like pissing our money away for no reason.
They are good
but
at that.
I like your iguana story. That's kind of cool. I had a buddy who was going around Hog Island, and they're just fishing along, and all of a sudden, he looks over just in time to see this bobcat come out of the tree, land in about 18 inches of water, grab this big old snook. He said, at least 35 to 40 inches.
Wow.
Drag the snook back up into the bushes, and off he went with it. You just don't think of a bobcat jumping in the water.
No, that's awesome.
And you don't think of being fishing on the east side, and all of a sudden having a 4-foot iguana swim up to you.
No, that was the first. We're talking about crazy reptile incidents. Last year I was fishing just south of Burnstorm Marina and had a good friend of mine, Larry Mullen from Pennsylvania, down, who is obsessed with snakes. And here we are fishing a pothole in the middle of a flat, and lo and behold, about a 2.5-foot rattlesnake swims right up to the boat. It was like so happy to see us. He was about to grab it with his bare hands. I talked him into using the dip net.
Yeah.
And most people in that situation would want that snake as far away from the boat as possible, but he couldn't get close enough to it. You know, we ended up putting it in.
What is he, Robert's cousin?
He was obsessed with it.
Yeah. You know, and the weird part about rattlesnakes when you're on the water, they're so happy to see the boat. Mm. They will, swim. Okay, look, I got a dry spot to go to. And they will try and get on the boat with you.
Exactly what he did.
But the myth is everyone thinks that they're actually trying to attack them and stuff like that.
No, they're just looking for a dry place to hang out.
Exactly.
They don't notice you as a threat or as anything good or bad. They're just, okay, another island. Look, I can get out of the water now.
Mm-hmm.
They're just happy to get on the boat.
Exactly. The snake was super calm. We ended up putting it in a wading basket, brought it back with us, and we released it on the east side of Burnstall Road out there in the Palmettos. I imagine it's still out there kicking.
It's probably pretty happy now.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the amount of adversity you can find in Charlotte Harbor. You're fishing this little remote island, and there's nothing for anywhere. And all of a sudden, along the shoreline, here walks a raccoon or a possum sticks his nose out.
My favorite is you're fishing these islands, and you'd think there'd be nothing living. All of a sudden, there's a boar hog, 100 pounds, standing up there and rooting on the edge of the bank on a low tide or something. Your clients from up north get a kick out of that, definitely.
Yeah. And you wouldn't think of it, Cayo Costa has a lot of hogs on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times. Why would they swim across the intercoastal, across all these different waters, to get onto Cayo Costa? I mean, what's the attraction out there that holds so many hogs?
I recently fished
like a predator.
I can't remember his last name. His first name is Chad. He's like park ranger out there for Cayo Costa, Don Pedro, and all those different islands.
He's a nice guy.
Super nice guy. I fished him in the Widdens Back Bay tournament they hold over there out of their marina, and he brought to my attention there's actually coyotes on Cayo Costa, and lots of them.
I was talking to Tom Fisher, Fishbone Charters Tom, and Tom was telling me, he's inundated. He's having a hard time with the turkey hunts now because there's so many darn coyotes, they're learning to be quiet. Mm. Because as soon as they open up and start gobbling, the coyotes hunt them down.
Exactly.
It's getting to be a real problem with the coyotes. You don't mind the hogs. They belong here. But right. The coyotes, I don't know. That's a real pain in the butt critter there.
Well, yeah. the hogs don't belong here, but they're proving to be profitable in a lot of manners, you know. I mean,
I don't know. There have been hogs all throughout the U.S.
Yeah, but they're all non-native. They're all an exotic species because they're a cross between wild boars and domesticated boars, but right. They're still considered an invasive species because there is no season on hogs. It's open all year round.
Yeah, they're not native to here, but the original hogs that were here were kind of hunted out, and they kind of crossed up a little bit. But, you know, a hog is the only thing in the world, the only creature that when you put it in a pen, it will lose the hair, the tusk will go back, it will learn to be domestic after a while. But if you take a regular domestic hog that's never been out of a pen, you know, five-year-old hog, pig, you know, just farm-raised pig, you know, big old pink and white pig, let it into the wild, it will start growing hair, it will grow tusk, it will turn wild, it will literally change its whole physical thing to become a wild hog. They're amazing animals, and we have a huge amount of them down here. It's actually crazy how many hogs.
Boca actually has a huge population of coyotes, too. They've actually had a trapper out there about 3 months ago set up 500 traps.
Yeah, bobcats as well. A lot of my clients that live or have homes on the island, they're always telling me stories. I woke up, and there's a bobcat on my dock. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
But bobcat's not as surprising because they're so elusive and secretive, and they can live underneath your house and stuff like that, never been seen. But coyotes are so leery of humans, even in a domestic or residential area, that it's surprising to hear that there's a big enough population on Boca to justify a trapper coming out there.
Yeah, and again, an island, but it is connected by a bridge. But and if you think about it, if that coyote goes out there 2 a.m, he is not getting run over.
Right.
I mean, there is not a car going on that bridge at 2 a.m. If that coyote's out running in the middle of the night, he's just going to go right over the bridge right onto the island. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many of them they are. It just absolutely astounds me. Now, we've been talking about a lot of exotic, weird stuff, like the iguanas and the hogs and all the other stuff. What about strange fish?
Actually, I got a good one for you, Frank. About 3 months ago, I think it was, Rhett Morris and I, who I think has done a show with you guys here recently.
Oh, yeah, I've been friends with Rhett for way longer than I should care to admit.
Great guy. We were doing a two-boat trip out of Burnt Store, and we left out of there mid-morning, and we're running north, and the only reason either one of us believed each other is because we both saw it, but there was it had to be 3 feet across the top of it, a perfectly white stingray. Now, you know, everyone has seen a dead stingray before it's flipped over. And
right, you see the white belly float across.
That is exactly what this one looks like. We've asked everybody and their brother if they have ever seen one before because we were both just kind of like, did we really see that? And we've come up with two other people that have seen it. Ralph Jones, who I know you know him.
Right, I know Ralph
and Ronnie. Right. Ralph Jones said he'd seen one a long time ago in a stop net. And Dale McDaniel actually was another person, same thing, gill netting way back in the day. They'd only seen one.
Right.
But they had seen him.
Yeah, I mean, I've never personally seen an albino stingray. I can't even imagine how it would survive because
that's
everything
what we were talking about.
Stingray.
Everything eats it, and now all of a sudden it's white. You know, it totally loses its whole camouflage. Obviously, it can get in the mud and do its deal there, but, I mean, it is white. It is white as a piece of paper.
That's crazy. I mean, I want to say that's a very lucky stingray to be able to survive as long as it did.
To survive to that size, absolutely.
You know,
anything albino to make it to even juvenile stage, let alone adulthood, is pretty unusual as far as there being albino stingrays around. Not super surprising because usually anything that gives multiple births tends to let out a lot of oddities. Like it's very common for there to be albino and leucistic sea turtles. They're not as unusual as you think. Just the survival rate's virtually
what's
nothing.
Albino, I get. What's the okay.
Leucistic, it's just another form of albinism. They lack the pigment, but they'll have blue eyes or black eyes.
You'll see that.
There's more technicalities to it, but basically a true albino loses its pigment, but what'll happen is, like, anything that's a dark pattern will turn like an orangish, exactly, pinkish color. And anything that's a light like background will be white. So you'll have white and orange contrast. Still, the pattern will be there. But usually leucistic means nothing. It'll be pure white. There will be virtually no pattern involved in it at all. And it'll either have blue or black eyes.
Okay. Now, that's strange enough for me. All right. We've been talking about all the crazy stuff. And there is so many crazy things. When you take people out here fishing in the harbor, sometimes you get so involved in the fishing, you forget to look around. Pick your head up every once in a while. Look up in the sky. Look around you. Look at the islands. Look in the water. Check out everything. So many cool things to see. Now, we're sitting here, and it's January 6th. We're the day before the front hits. We've got this massive front. We're looking today. It's 80 degrees.
We're within hours of it hitting.
Yeah, we're within. It's 80 degrees now. I mean, it's hot out. And it's hard to believe in a matter of hours it's going to be around 30 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brian, Captain Brian Ball, I'm sorry. I haven't told anybody who you were, have I?
No,
Captain Brian.
You did, yep.
But I'm sorry. We're so used to, we've been friends for a while. And so, tell me the name of your charter business.
I run a business out of Burnt Storm Marina. My website or webpage is tarpon fishing southwest florida.com. We do everything from inshore to offshore and everything in between.
And if you click Brian's picture right next to this radio clip, it'll take you to his website. You can learn all about it. Me and Robert, I figure you know about it. If not, you can click our pictures and it'll tell you nothing. no, there is stuff that you can go through on it. But click Brian's picture. He's a great guy. Now, Brian, you've been on the water a lot. It's been tough fishing the last few days.
It has.
Now, what's going to go on? We got
with this front, it's... I have zero interest in the next 2 days to be on the water, I'll be honest with you. It's cold and windy as it's supposed to get. About the only thing I'm interested in catching is a mullet, possibly. And I think that's about come to its end for this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't even... unless I knew I was going to get 20,000 pounds, ain't no way I'd be out there. And if you got 20,000 pounds in a 30-mile-an-hour wind, you're going to sink anyway.
Exactly.
So it's... Today, the next couple days might be a good time to clean your tackle, check on your boat, look towards your gear, change the oil, check your lower unit.
I agree.
Because what's this going to do to fishing?
It just shuts it down. You know, they go into like a state of mind where I think they're just like, man, they feel it. You know, we're out of here. We're not going to sit around. The fish that are there are so just lockjawed and don't want to bite. I mean, it makes for some really, really tough conditions when it gets to the weather like they're saying we're going to have.
Now, Thursday is going to be back 80 degrees, but I'm going to call Thursday kind of a real wishy-washy day, you know, fishy-washy. You know,
I was driving over here talking to Danny Latham. We both have a trip on Thursday, and we're like, man, it's going to be iffy, you know, how it's going to be right the first pretty day right after a crappy front like this is always a coin toss.
Especially as powerful of a front as this is. If it was a really minor front and just kept it chilly for a couple of days,
it wouldn't be a big deal.
It's not as big of a deal, but when it's this hardcore of a front,
yeah, it's going to be flipping a quarter.
It could sometimes take 3 or 4 days after that goes through, even if you have beautiful weather.
I'm going to sit there and say it's a flip a quarter because we need this cold of weather. We need that cold snap to hit. It's going to bring those fish back, get them feeding, get them doing all that stuff. I'm going to call Friday, Saturday, and Sunday some of the best times to be fishing of the year because after this cool spell, if we get that nice warm thing, everything's coming up on the flats. Once that water comes back up, there's going to be gazillions of dead pinfish everywhere. Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, the whole bottom of those bays are going to be littered with dead bait fish. And that's going to just, the redfish, everything's going to flock into those bays. So I'm going to call Thursday a give or take day because of the amount of dead stuff. If we get that front that comes through and it gets as cold as it should with that wind and the low water, it's going to wipe out millions of tiny bait fish. And they're all going to be laying there dead and stuck in the grass on the bottom and stuff. And that's going to bring in fish and a lot of them.
Hopefully we don't have a repeat of the snook incident. I hope it doesn't stay that cold that long. It doesn't look like it's going to.
Well, most of those snook that died were the lazy, retarded, dumb ones that they shouldn't have. They died because they were stupid. Snook are supposed to leave the flats. But if you grow up through to a 10, 15-year period where you don't have a freeze or ever get really cold, they don't learn to leave.
That's right.
And they got lazy and stupid. And when you get lazy and stupid, you die. you know, if the rest of us are lucky, you know, natural selection. But this should not be a big deal. And if you do see snook floating, just leave them alone, because there's a very good chance by afternoon that sun will cook them up. They're going to lose that haze. It'll take them a little while, but they'll right up and they'll swim back. It's, we watched it happen time after time after time during the 80s. All these snook floating on a canal, no way out, lakes, and there they are, and then all of a sudden they're back swimming. And it's just kind of going into shock. Robert knows more of the technical stuff about it than I do, but let's not get panicky about this one, because even if they do hit, I don't think it's going to hit cold enough or hard enough to kill them, but it could put them to sleep, shock them, do something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just any cold-blooded animal is going to react that way. You know, and snook are such a tropical species, they aren't super cold tolerant. So
I always thought it was funny, because after this cold, they're saying, oh, we have no snook in Tampa, and there's a, we're short, and we had 15 years of abnormally warm weather, and the snook are not supposed to be from Tampa north. That's an if. That's the very end of their range.
People get spoiled, though. They get straight-ahead itis, and they don't even remember yesterday, let alone last year or 2 years ago.
Well, ever since I shot my brain with radiation, I remember the 80s better than I remember yesterday.
But at least you have a legitimate excuse. I mean, it's funny. You know, it's like everyone has all this technology about them, and yet they don't retain anything.
No, it's, and even prior, and that's a technology fault.
Technology has made it a serious issue, but people are so worried about today, and that's it, that they don't remember yesterday.
Well, no, they remember the last 2-3 years, and this is what it was. Because let's face it, most people only moved down here a little while ago.
People were driving over telephone poles to get in the parking lot the day after the hurricane, asking us if we were open.
So, well, not quite what I'm talking about, but that's just obtuse.
It's still the same premise, though, because
I mean, literally, the day after the hurricane, the front windows are caved in. The roof is only 4 feet off the floor. We're having to work around everything, trying to get all the bait and stuff out of here. And, I mean, there's no power poles. There's not a traffic light left anywhere in the county. And this guy walks in, you got any light bait? Mm. I mean, literally, the day after the hurricane, we're destroyed.
Wow.
I'm looking at this, and Robert's just looking at it like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, where's the cameras?
Yeah, that's different. That's obtuse. You know. So, anyway, back to reality. Right now, you're calling for pretty much, I wouldn't even bother going out the next couple days.
I'm
going to
leave it alone.
Now, you're hopeful on Thursday, but not, you're hoping for the best, but expecting the worst.
Right.
And I'm kind of the opposite way. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad, because I've seen these cold fronts when it gets so cold and then warms up, and especially when it kills a bunch of little bait. And I've seen it just make that fishing crazy. So I'm going to go with you 50-50 on Thursday, but I'm calling Friday, Saturday, and Sunday some of the best days of the year, as long as it stays nice and even. We don't get a front right behind this one.
Right.
I'm thinking they're going to be some of the best fishing days of this year with that cool temperatures and crazy stuff. Any thoughts, Robert?
No, I'd have to agree with that. I mean, I'm torn with it both directions. I don't think it's going to get cold enough to really destroy too many bait to make it a feeding frenzy, but I'm going to be right on the fence with this one.
Okay, so I got my neck stuck way out there thinking, you know, what's going to happen, but I don't mind. I've got broad shoulders. I can support this. So, Brian, any good advice for somebody coming up on the weekend?
No, I mean, we just have to wait and see what this weather does. Like you said, you know, we had two fronts. This will be the second one, kind of right behind the other. I haven't really looked past Friday, so I don't know what Saturday and Sunday is supposed to bring weather-wise, but Thursday and Friday looked like they were going to be doable, so I'm just going to kind of play it by ear.
And look for a little bit of deeper water, even though that after a front, typically, we get that big slosh back in. It would be nice if this front was a little bit milder. This could really kick us off. We need those cold weathers. But anyway, any last words, Brian?
Well, that's all I got for you guys. Stay warm.
Robert?
Oh, I'm going to be dressed like Nanook from the North tomorrow.
Yeah, Nanook from the North ain't going to have nothing on me. I am definitely a warm weather wuss. There is no doubt about this. So I hope everybody knows where their parkas, woolly underwear, and all that stuff is. And to tell you, these Wickaway shirts, they make great long underwear, guys. Really help keep you warm. and they're not just for the sun anymore. So, anyway, try and stay warm. This is Fishin' Frank, Radio Fishin', Captain Brian Ball, and Robert. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishin'.